Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. Drink beer, talk football. If you're new to the show, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast, and follow on social media at PGF Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is the official beer of Pint Glass Football. Follow them at McKenzie Brewing. We are back with more in-depth NFL draft coverage like nobody else. And today we're going to be giving out our draft grades for the AFC South. And we have a special guest interview later in the show. But with me again, my co-host, radio and podcast veteran, Tyrone Powell. What is up, Ty?
Nothing much. We back in the saddle again. And in the month of June, halfway through the year, about a few months away from the season for this thing to kick off and our predictions to try to come out right for you and yours out there in the world today.
Yeah, it's just crazy, Ty. It's been so much fun doing all this in-depth draft coverage, man. It's crazy that here we are in June. We've still got a ton more to get to. It's going to be so much fun trying to give you guys the best coverage of the draft of anybody else. We're trying to give it to you guys like nobody else, like I said in that intro. And today it's a lot of fun because we're shifting to the AFC South. Some interesting teams that had some interesting drafts, and I can't wait to jump in here, Ty. And I'm going to start with the Jacksonville Jaguars. We all know they had the first overall pick, and they took Trevor Lawrence, 6'6", 213 pounds. This is one of the highest-rated quarterback prospects ever. He's really that elite of a talent. He's an elite pocket passer, and he's a true dual-threat runner, which makes him such a special weapon at the quarterback position. He's got a strong arm. He can make every throw. He can make those deep ball throws, the intermediate routes. There's really not a throw that this kid cannot make. He was 86-4 as a starter going back to his high school days. You want to talk about a winner at the quarterback level? This kid is that. He's a confident leader who's poised under pressure, crazy accurate with the football. Tough kid, big kid, strong kid. He stares down the barrel and fires it in there, even under pressure. And when you watch his tape at Clemson, that's something that I really love about his game. Now, if you're going to pick anything against his game, any knocks on his game, so to speak, there aren't very many. This kid checks just about every box. I would say some of the few things that maybe you could pick his game, it would be the Clemson offense wasn't exactly pro style, and it did give him some simpler reads. So I think he is going to have to learn a more advanced offense. Obviously, at the NFL level, he's going to have to learn more advanced defenses than what he saw at the ACC. But there's no reason he won't be able to do that. He's a high IQ kid, and he has all the talent in the world to be able to do that. And the other knock on his game, I would say, is he's an average deep ball thrower as far as his accuracy. He's not the deep ball thrower that we saw from Justin Herbert his rookie year, who instantly became one of the best deep ball throwers in the NFL year one. He's not quite as good as Herbert in that regard, but actually he's got a lot of similarities to Herbert as far as the size and ability to move in the pocket and just does so many things well. This is a franchise-changing quarterback, Ty, a truly special prospect. This is a guy who'd be the number one pick in almost any draft. He's the best quarterback prospect in almost a decade. I said it on a prior episode, Trevor Lawrence, for him, the biggest hurdle will be overcoming the dysfunction that is the Jacksonville Jaguars. But from a talent standpoint, this kid's really going to be fun to watch. Now, later in the first round, Jacksonville at pick 25 took Travis Etienne, the running back out of Clemson, Trevor Lawrence's teammate. He's 5'10", 215 pounds. This guy's a three-down running back. He can catch out of the backfield. I'd say he's average in pass protection. That's probably something he could work on a little bit. But this guy is a home run hitter. I mean, big time breakaway speed, 78 touchdowns at Clemson and 16 touchdown runs of 44 or more yards. So when he gets in the open field, he can really take it to the house, an absolute game breaker. He's a physical player. He's not afraid to run you over, but he can run by you, like I said, as well. So he's a very balanced player. He allows his blocks to develop with patience, and I really like that about his game. Now, he needs to work on his ball security. He coughs it up a little too often, and he's a great receiving back, but he does drop too many easy balls. I think that's something that he's going to have to work on as well. But this is a guy who's the all-time leading rusher in ACC conference history. So you're talking about a big-time productive player. He's got a nice burst through the hole. He's got good balance, just a really good all-around running back. And we found out after the draft, Ty, that Travis Etienne wasn't who the Jags were targeting with this pick. They wanted Kadarius Toney, the wide receiver from Florida, who ended up getting drafted by the Giants a few picks earlier. Now, reports have come out saying that Jacksonville could be using him as a wide receiver. That's head-scratching. I think a hybrid role, maybe, but I can't see him full-time on the outside. If he plays running back, I like this pick a lot. But if they actually move him to wide receiver, I don't think it makes a lot of sense. To me, it's like, why wouldn't you just draft a wide receiver then? I'm not sure what to make of that. I think he actually is going to be more of a hybrid player that maybe lines up outside. I think some of those rumors might be a little bit, you know, false. We'll see what happens. It's definitely intriguing, the stories we're hearing out of Jacksonville. In the second round, the Jags took cornerback Tyson Campbell. He's a talented player, but I think there were better players available. So I'm not that high on that pick. I did like the selection of offensive tackle Walker Little from Stanford. Now, this is a kid who missed 2019 with an injury, and he opted out last season. But this is a guy who has a ton of talent, and some people even thought he might have been a first rounder in this draft. He has that kind of ability. So I also like the Andre Sisco selection, the safety from Syracuse. This guy's a ball hawk. He had 13 interceptions in college, and an injury last season is really the only reason he fell in this draft, but a really nice value pick by the Jaguars. This was a really nice first draft for the new regime in Jacksonville. Ty, I'm going to give them an A-. I'm pretty high on this class. What did you make of Jacksonville's draft?
The thing that I have with Jacksonville's draft is the crazy impact of these players hitting the ground running. I think that Trevor Lawrence could be a quarterback that can make a difference now. I don't know in the win-loss situation. It's something that will help Jacksonville. I think that he will have an impact on his season and try to help Jacksonville become a storm within the AFC, let alone in that division itself. I've been talking to others that think that he can actually help them win the South, which I don't think that's there, but he is that quarterback that if it's not working, he can take off, and he's heady enough to make that happen now instead of being one of those quarterbacks that comes out of the draft and doesn't know whether to take off or not. So he's already intelligent enough to make those plays happen and make the defense be responsible. Travis Etienne is definitely a monster in his own right coming out of college. I don't know if he'll hit the ground running, but I believe so that he will. I give them a solid A. They concentrated all across the board from defense to offense at all three levels, defensive line, and definitely in the secondary as well on the defensive side of the ball. They also got the tight end out of Ohio State, Luke Farrell, who I'm a fan of as well. Big target, 6'6", 251, can make plays downfield, has decent speed to be his size, and you're going to have to make a business decision to come and get him. So I'm giving them a solid A. I'm not going to lie about that one.
Yeah, I like that pick as well. And from what I've been told, he was a guy that Urban Meyer had recruited. So there's a connection there. So he's going to know a little more in depth about him than most. But yeah, this is a really, really good class by Jacksonville. And it's a team with a lot of holes on this roster, but I think they did a nice job in filling in some of those holes with guys who can make an impact right away. So that's going to shift us to the Houston Texans. What did you make of their draft, Ty?
See, now this is pretty interesting with the Houston Texans, what I have for their draft, because the Houston Texans, I feel like they did not do a great job. But I'm stuck on one pick because it's the homer in me and the bias that I have for Brevin Jordan. I think he's going to be a player that plays now. I think he'll get on the field, and him being a hybrid tight end that could play on the line, he can block okay. He can actually split out and make, you know, plays in the slot if he has to, too. I don't think they'll be one of those outside the number type of tight ends that they can, but I think they could use him with versatility. This is interesting that they went with Davis Mills. A lot of people are up and down about him, but at least they try to secure themselves with a quarterback that they could be ready for if things do continue to happen with the Deshaun Watson situation while we're sitting on the sidelines with our popcorn waiting to see if Houston does the right thing with Deshaun Watson. So at least Davis Mills is one of the guys that'll be in a stable depth chart-wise to, you know, back up that situation. They get a receiver in Nico Collins. And the interesting thing about Collins coming out of the Big 12, he made plays with the Wolverines. But knowing that they're still trying to build from losing DeAndre Hopkins, at least this is another body that can help them make plays while they're, you know, trying to figure this out with all of the interesting things that Bill O'Brien did. And I'll choke on that one if I start talking about Bill O'Brien. Another situation that we have is Garrett Wallow, the inside linebacker out of TCU. The one thing about him is he's going to have to go out there and prove himself because of the Big 12 and their mantra of them not playing solid defense, because you see those high-scoring games. But he does have good NFL size. We'll just see if he can actually get out there and make these plays, because they know them as having good speed and very quick feet. So this is an interesting thing that I'm seeing for the Houston Texans. I'm giving them a solid B-. I don't want to go lower than that to be brutal, but I think they could have done better with the picks that they have. But these are the notables that I have off across the board. I want to see how you feel about the Houston Texans coming out of this draft.
Yeah, Ty, when I look at this draft by Houston, the Davis Mills pick is definitely intriguing. This is a guy who definitely flashed some talent at Stanford. Doesn't have a whole lot of experience, but I like taking the flyer on a guy in the third round who has some upside, especially with the Deshaun Watson situation being up in the air right now. That pick makes a lot of sense, because this is a guy who was really starting to get a lot of buzz going into the draft. There were some people that were higher on him than others, but he's definitely a talented guy with NFL size, and I think taking a chance on a guy like that in the third round is certainly not a bad option. It's a good insurance play in case things go south with Deshaun Watson. As we know, that's been an ongoing situation there in Houston. I also like the Nico Collins pick, Ty. This is a guy who averaged 19.7 yards per catch in 2019. He's a guy who can climb the ladder and high point the football. He's good against contested catches, and he can pull balls out of the air in traffic. He's a tough receiver. I really like that pick as well. And I'm with you on Brevin Jordan. He's a little bit undersized for a tight end, but this is a guy who was really productive at the U. So I think he's a guy that can make an impact as well. I don't think it was a great draft class, but I think it was a solid draft class. And so I'm with you. I think B-, B range is definitely a fair grade for the Houston Texans. I'm going to shift gears here, Ty, to the Indianapolis Colts. This is a team that in the first round with the 21st pick overall, they took Kwity Paye, the edge defender out of Michigan. He's 6'3", 261 pounds. This is a guy who really wowed scouts and coaches at his pro day. He's an explosive player with a twitchy quickness for his size. He really moves well. Coaches rave about his leadership, and he was a team captain, has a great work ethic. I really like that about him. I love those types of players, a locker room guy. He's got quick hands, quick feet, and he's shown the ability on tape to have the power to collapse the pocket. Now, he's not a guy that was overly productive as far as sacks, but he's a guy that will give you consistent effort on every snap. Like I said, he's a strong, quick guy. He's very athletic. He's definitely one of those guys that I don't think we've seen his best football just yet, because he only had 19 starts. Like I said, not a lot of sacks, but he gets pressure consistently. NFL coaches and scouts were hoping that that would be the next step for him. And I'm sure Colts fans now are hoping that he can get those sack numbers up and not just pressure the quarterback. But I'm not sure we've seen the best football from him just yet. With his work ethic and NFL coaching, this is a player who could develop into a great defender at the next level. He was the number 15 prospect on my big board, so I also think this is a great value for where they got him at pick 21. I expected him to go a little earlier than this. In the second round, with the 54th overall pick, the Colts took Deo Odeyingbo, the defensive end out of Vanderbilt. He's 6'5", 285 pounds, really long, athletic, and a versatile player who played all over the D-line. He's got a rare combination of size, length, and athletic ability. You just don't see very many guys with the combination that this guy has physically. He was a three-year starter who improved each year at Vanderbilt, really played at a high level against really good competition in the SEC. Now, he needs to improve his strength. I think that's something he can do once he gets into an NFL weight room, but he's got powerful hands. He can control offensive linemen. He has multiple pass rush moves, which is something I like. He's a pretty polished player in that regard. He's got a swim move, a spin move, a stab and swivel move. Now, he tore his ACL in January, so most likely he's going to miss all of his rookie season. That's a big red flag for a guy in the second round. He's also a guy who misses too many tackles, but all in all, he's a talented player. It's really hard to grade this pick, Ty. From a talent and size standpoint, there's a lot to like, but taking a guy in the second round that probably won't play his rookie year, it's tough for me to justify that. And when you look at the Colts draft as a whole, the Colts came into this draft really in need of an offensive tackle to replace Anthony Costanzo. And in a deep draft class with tackles, they decided to double down on defensive ends with their first two picks, and one essentially being a redshirt. They also needed a corner, but they neglected the position entirely in this draft. I like the players they took in round one and two, but I really thought tight end Kylan Granson was a big reach later in the draft. They didn't fill the obvious holes that they needed on this roster, and with only one day one starter in Kwity Paye, it's really hard for me to get too excited about this class for the Colts, Ty. I'm going to give them a C-. What did you make of their class?
Wow, you're pretty brutal. I actually gave them a BB+. I'm in between that situation. Here's why. I feel like Sam Ehlinger will be an actual good backup if things don't go right for Carson Wentz, especially with this team already being a postseason team. They already made moves on the offensive side of the ball, which I think it has to catch up to the defensive side of the ball, because the defense actually helped, you know, anchor a lot of what they had to go to this postseason. So looking at the Deo pick, Deo was actually an interesting one for me as well. They also went with safety Sean Davis out of Florida too to help them defensively as well. They also have the offensive tackle to help them out at Will Fries out of the Big Ten, and they're notables for being blockers out of that Big Ten conference too. So I did want to go B+ in that range. I feel like you're being critical, but it's understandable on which way you're going. But I think Kwity Paye is the big name that everybody seen come out of the first round for them. And him being on the defensive side of the ball where they have Leonard and all of those guys that probably get him on the ground running too. This will be interesting to see what the Colts are like going into this 2021-2022 season.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Ty. That's definitely fair. The Kwity Paye pick I'm really high on. It's just the rest of the draft, I felt like they just missed on some positions that they needed to fill, especially at cornerback. That one was really mind-boggling to me. The Sam Ehlinger pick, I wasn't too excited about until we had our guest on recently, and he broke down for us that he thought that Sam Ehlinger could actually come in and have almost a gadget role, a similar to a Taysom Hill type of role, a lesser athletic version, but a guy that you can have certain packages for and could get playing time right away. So that's got me a little higher on that pick than I was originally, but it's definitely an interesting draft by the Colts. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because this is a team that's drafted really well in recent years. So I might be a little too low on them, Ty, but only time will tell. So why don't you finish off the AFC South for us here, Ty?
The following team that I have is the Tennessee Titans, and they come out of the gate. Cornerback out of Virginia Tech, Caleb Farley. I know a great deal about him being an ACC guy myself. The one thing about Virginia Tech is the team actually had suffered, but they have a lot of great athletes coming out of this university. 6'2", 197 type of guy, spots the ball well. Decent speed as well coming out of that interesting university. I mean, it's not the same Beamer ball, but you can get the production of this Tennessee Titans team who's structured around a guy like Mike Vrabel and coming from that lineage of being a Patriot guy. So I think that this is something that he can instill into a defensive guy already to try and help anchor a lot of this stuff while they just got the addition of Julio Jones coming to Tennessee too. So this offense should be pretty structured well. So going to the offense, they picked up a tackle and Dylan Raddins. This is interesting because we know what was going on with Taylor Lewan. So knowing that they're getting a tackle to come in there, that actually helps them as well. You also get an inside linebacker in Monty Rice out of Georgia, being a SEC guy and all of the stuff that Georgia was able to do in the past couple of seasons while he was there. Big target type of guy, 6'2", 233. Definitely a ball hawk at the position as well too. So we'll see what he's able to do for this defense. And knowing that, like I said, again, Vrabel being a linebacker too, so this should actually help them. They also go cornerback as well with Elijah Molden out of Washington, Pac-12 play. I think he's a work in progress, especially coming out of the Pac-12. I think that this is going to be something that he's going to be in the midst of that stable, that they're going to be running in and out in the system. Or they get a wide receiver in Des Fitzpatrick out of Louisville, speedy type of guy, and coming out of a speedy offense with the Cardinals as well. I think he could get in the offense and do some things and learn from not only Brown on one side and you got Julio on the other side as well, but being able to be a third or fourth wheel, be the one bringing the storm to these people. So I like what they've done across the board, especially what they've done offensively to help take pressure off of not only having a crowded box on trying to slow down Derek, but also making it easier for a guy like Tannehill, who I'm not that high on, but I'm going to go with a solid B plus here as well. I'm anchoring on A minus B plus. I do want to go B plus just to be fair, because I want to see these guys get out there and do something. But I feel Tennessee did okay approaching this 2021-2022 season. How do you feel about the Tennessee Titans?
Yeah, I think I'm with you, Ty. This was a draft that I really liked. I thought the Titans had a really nice draft, and it starts with Caleb Farley. This guy, you could easily make a case as the best cornerback in this class. He is an absolute stud. When you watch his tape, it's eye-popping what he can do on the football field. The only big question mark for him is the health concerns. But if he can stay healthy, man, watch out, because this is a guy who can make a big-time impact year one. If he can stay on the field, I was really high on Farley as far as the player. He's had a lot of injury concerns, so that's really a risky pick, but he slid in this draft all the way to number 22. And I think at 22, there's too much value for them to ignore. And this was a team that lost Adoree Jackson, Desmond King, and Malcolm Butler in the secondary. So they desperately needed cornerbacks. And I also like Elijah Molden in round three. This is a guy out of Washington, big time playmaker. He's going to be a guy who can come in and play the nickelback position immediately. I think he could be a day one starter. He's a natural nickel and has the perfect size and speed to play that position. So I like that pick. I like the Monty Rice pick as well, the linebacker. This is a guy who's got sideline to sideline speed. He's a tackling machine, just a very good all-around player. I was impressed with this class. I thought they definitely hit on a lot of players throughout. Even their very last pick, safety Brady Breeze out of Oregon. This is a guy who played at a super high level at Oregon and played in some big-time bowl games, Pac-12 championship games, and played at a very high level. So even a guy like that late in this draft, I think, has some value. Just a really, really good draft by the Titans. I'm actually going to give them an A, Ty. I was really high on this class. I thought it was one of the better classes in the NFL. The Caleb Farley pick is really going to determine if this class holds up down the road. When we look back at this class 3-4 years from now, if he ends up being the player that he's capable of being and can stay healthy, I think this will be an A class. But on paper, I love what they did. But that is going to do it for today's AFC South draft grades. Hope you guys enjoyed it, PGF Nation. But don't go anywhere. We've got a special guest coming up right now. Excited to have back on the show Chris Robin, who's a Fantasy Sports Writer Association member. You can find his work at theundroppables.com, teamriserfall.com, gridironratings.com, and Fantasy Pros. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at Detroit Beastie. Chris, you've got to be the hardest working guy in fantasy sports, man. Thanks for making the time to come on the show.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome. I don't know if I'm the hardest working guy, but I do what I can. I enjoy what I do. So I work as much as everybody else allows me to. If nobody's reading or interacting with me, what's the point?
That's certainly the case, isn't it? Well, why don't you tell us, speaking of work, why don't you tell us what you've been working on recently here, Chris?
I just published my rankings, my preseason kind of thing, you know, summer through the OTAs and through spring or summer camps. My top, I got 350 guys ranked now on Fantasy Pros, my top 100 IDP and my top 250 offensive rankings. And they're broken down in super flex formats or half point PPR. I even, you know, trudged through it and I did standard scoring rankings just because I know there are still people playing in standard scoring leagues. So this coming season, all my DFS stuff will be found at the Undroppables. My biggest claim to fame, which isn't huge at all, but bottom of the barrel, that's my number one kind of what I present to the community or to the fantasy sports world. Bottom of the barrel will be found at the Undroppables this fall and through the winter for a football season.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you heard it, PGF Nation. Go check out his work. He's got it in a lot of different places. Always a great read for sure. But I want to kick this question off first here, Chris. The jury is still out on Tua in Miami, but he didn't have a lot of help at the wide receiver position. Enter Jaylen Waddle, his former teammate from Alabama. What are your thoughts on Waddle as a fantasy prospect, and can he make Tua more fantasy relevant next year?
I know you asked about Waddle, but you have to start with the quarterback, where the ball's coming from. And really fast, we saw Tua last year. I didn't even pay any attention to him. So about a week or so ago, when these photos started to surface of him, you know, very much bulked up, he put on some muscle, he put on some mass. And I had no idea that that hip injury was that big of a hindrance to what he was trying to do on the field, but not only on the gridiron, but in the gym, lifting weights, squatting, curling, whatever he had to do to bulk up. But if you've seen those photos, Tua is bigger. He looks strong. He looks healthy. He's very active. You know, if you look back a month or so, even leading up pre-draft and even post-draft, you know, people are sending photos. They're at the bar. They're on their boats, you know, these celebrities and professional athletes. But Tua was in the warehouse doing agility drills and working on his feet with cones and all that. So I'm very excited to see what Tua can do this coming season. And he went through the draft unscathed, kind of like Gaskin there too. They didn't draft a quarterback. So it looks as though Tua is their QB1 for the foreseeable future. And then we turn our attention to Jalen Waddle, selected by Miami 6th overall. He's arguably, you can argue that he's the most explosive wide receiver in this class. You have Chase and you have the Moore brothers. They're not related, but they share the same last name, obviously. But Jalen Waddle is going to go hop in there, and he could be the wide receiver one, the unquestioned wide receiver one from day one. Once camp starts and they start it moving, who does he have there that it's going to take a ton to beat out? Devontae Parker, a 27th-year-old breakout. I mean, Parker can do what he needs to do. Preston Williams. These guys aren't an immediate threat, let's say, to Jalen Waddle being that wide receiver one there. I have some projections too, if you're interested in those. I have Waddle for about 110 targets, catching about 65 or 70 of those, just shy of 1,000 yards. But you're looking at 5 or 6 touchdowns from Waddle here. And depending on where you drafted him in rookie drafts, obviously a first-round talent. I've seen just very minute spots or instances where he's fallen out of the first round. And this is rookie drafts, by the way. So Jalen Waddle is full steam ahead for me. Wheels up, full send, all those corny cliches people make up. But again, I'm excited about the combo of Tua and Waddle. And again, in DFS terms, that's called a stack. I want to stack Tua with Waddle, and I think it's very doable in dynasty formats and certainly in redraft formats this coming season.
Chris, I have a question from the New York Giants draft. How do you feel about them with the selection of Kadarius Toney, or is Kenny Golladay the guy in the fantasy situation? Who do you think will be explosive? Because that's a receiver that you missed with Toney.
When you look at Toney compared to Golladay, I don't even think it's a comparison. Now, we get in situations here where, you know, you say, I'd rather have this guy, it's not close, and we go from there. But in this instance, I don't find it close. And I'm not trying to be like a jerk, or I'm not trying to sound like an egomaniac here. Toney is Toney. I wasn't really impressed about what he had one very good year in college, and that was it. If you look at the stats and the numbers he accumulated at Florida, he was an older breakout. Now, I know those numbers, you know, there's analytics guys and there's numbers guys, and they argue, and it's not a good scene here. But Toney, he was selected by the Giants, as I'm sure you know, Tyrone, 20th overall, 5'11", 193 pounds. He's a slot receiver, but he can also, he's that gadget guy. So you look at him kind of like a Curtis Samuel prospect in a way. Samuel's gone out of Carolina and Washington now. But then when you turn your attention to Kenny Golladay, and again, I don't want to be labeled as a Detroit Lions homer. Like, all my analysis is, it's not that. Kenny Golladay is a very good wide receiver. He's got three out of his first 4 seasons were over 1,000 yards. I have their production coming into the season. It's not very close to me, and that's why I say that. So I have Kenny Golladay at about 120, 125 targets, and that's, I firmly do believe Daniel Jones takes a big step forward here now. So I prefer Golladay, and again, I don't think it's necessarily close. 120 targets for Kenny Golladay, about 75, 80 receptions, over 1,000 yards again, and I think he's on the cusp of getting to 10 touchdown receptions here.
Kyle Pitts, as we know, is one of the best tight end prospects we've seen in years. Chris, I think he's a guy for me that could be an 80 reception guy, 1,000 yards, 8 touchdown type of player year one. He's going into a good situation with a veteran quarterback and Matt Ryan who can still play at a high level. But what are your projections for Kyle Pitts?
It's an odd occurrence to me in a good way. You know, there's good things, there's bad things. And when it comes to Kyle Pitts, as it stands now, it's all sunshine and rainbows. You know, Julio is now gone. Atlanta fans are, you know, in turmoil. They're bummed out. He's, you know, the best wide receiver they've probably ever had here. And so then we get into that territory where Pitts is in redraft ADP and even dynasty ADP. He's just blowing the doors off of all of those numbers, those ADP numbers. And then you get the groups of people that say that this is absurd. You should never draft a rookie tight end this way. And those same people say rookie tight ends take a year or two to develop. Look at TJ Hockenson in Detroit, or, you know, these other, you know, big time tight ends, Kittle and even Kelsey. But to me, Pitts is going to command a lot of respect on the defensive side of the ball, but they're going to, on the offensive side of things, they're going to have to give him his due and his share. I have him projected for just over 100 targets. And again, I just want to remind you, when I say this stuff, there's a margin of error. Like you could slide it five or six one way or another here. So let's just call it 100 targets even, about 70, 75 receptions, which is ambitious. I know that. Just shy of 1,000 yards, probably 820, 825 yards, but you're looking at a healthy average here. I have him for just shy of 12 yards a reception and about 5 or 6 touchdowns, which is fantastic, you know, not only for a tight end, but, you know, any offensive skill position. And we know what he does in the red zone, right? He's a big dude, big kid. He's going to get up and he's going to take it from you by any means necessary. So again, you can consider him a mid-range tight end one, but I think the question here is, what are you willing to give up to acquire him, and what kind of assets are you willing to forego in a draft, in a dynasty startup draft? If you draft Pitts in the third or fourth round, then you're probably passing on a Chris Carson, or you're passing on a David Montgomery. So there's a lot on the table, or excuse me, there's a lot at stake with Kyle Pitts in terms of our fantasy drafts, let's say.
A lot of people in the fantasy community are really high on DeVonta Smith. I like his talent, but I don't love his situation for putting up big fantasy numbers in Philly with Jalen Hurts at quarterback. What are your thoughts on him in year one?
Oh, man. Well, this is where we're going to disagree, Brad. I'm not going to be rude about it. We can talk like adults. That's what we're doing here. I think right off the bat, DeVonta Smith is going to see a lot of work day in and day out on the practice field when push comes to shove during the season. So again, my projections, I have DeVonta over 110 targets, right around my sweet spot for him would be like 112 to 114 targets. He'll only catch about 70, 75 of those, just shy of 1,000 yards, but he's going to have a very, very healthy yards per catch average. I have him at about 13.5 to 14 yards per reception and about 5 touchdowns. The only reason I say where I disagree is because I'm personally in a dynasty league, if it matters here, I sold off all my assets and I went all in on Jalen Hurts, added him off the waiver wire in like week one or two last year. And then I sold off Ryan Tannehill. I sold off, Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff. I did not sell Ryan Tannehill. And the draft came and went. He's safe. And now he's Philly's quarterback one. Right. And you got Smith, you got Rhaegar, you have Miles Sanders here. So that offense could potentially be, you know, if they can start clicking on all cylinders, I expect DeVonta Smith to be a huge factor in that offense. And not only for Hurts development, but for Smith's own development as a rookie.
Chris, we know how important the running back position is when it comes to fantasy football, and there seems to always be a rookie or two that make a big impact. Najee Harris and Travis Etienne are guys on a lot of people's radar, but what other running backs in this rookie class should people be looking to draft?
Well, the easiest answer, like the low-hanging fruit, as they say, would be Trey Sermon in San Francisco. It's like a mad dash. It's like they're in San Francisco, and that's where the gold rush was. You could say, oh, my, the rush is on to get Trey Sermon on all of our teams. He's going to be the RB1, and Jeff Wilson is out. He tore up his knee and he won't be playing. I think he's having surgery or might have already had it. He's out 6 to 8 months. So now that depth chart – at running back is not all that thin. And Trey Sermon could, step in and do something right off the bat here. Again, Elijah Mitchell, another draft pick from the same team. So I'd like to think, the optimist in me, Brad, would say that, Trey Sermon will put it all together for them fairly certain. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the Michael Shanahan offense. It's very run centric and they get other running backs involved and you go from there. Now the question with that running back, and they got Wayne Gallman too. Raheem Mostert is still that. Kyle Juszczyk is going to get goal line work. We saw that he scores what, 2 or 3 touchdowns a season here. So Trey Sermon has his work cut out for him if he wants to leapfrog Wayne Gallman. The one I would point out would be Trey Sermon, and just lump him in with Elijah Mitchell, Michael Carter in New York for the Jets. Of all the rookie running backs aside that aren't Najee Harris and Travis Etienne, Michael Carter has the clearest path to RB1 kind of targets and touches here. I love the idea of Kenny Gainwell in Philadelphia here, because with Kenny Gainwell, it's kind of like a slow burn, right? So nobody's really on him. Nobody's really talking about him. Everybody is fixated on Javonte or Travis or Najee or in Michael Carter and Trey Sermon. And Kenny Gainwell is just sitting there just losing his luster, and we can go out and add him fairly cheap, very reasonable price here. And I love Miles Sanders, but I think there is a role in Philadelphia for Kenny Gainwell to catch passes. And if you watched anything he did in college at, I believe, Kentucky, that's what he excels at. Out of the backfield, catching passes, making people miss, finding those underneath routes. So of all these guys, I think, the price point is just perfect for the kind of a fantasy football spender I am. I'm not a glitz and a glamour kind of guy, but so Kenny Gainwell really strikes a chord with me. I love Chuba Hubbard in Carolina. We know that whole offense goes through Christian McCaffrey. And I don't want to hear people say, well, can he stay healthy? He had one bad season, one down season where he was hurt in and out of the lineup. McCaffrey is a stud. He's going to be fine, which we can get Chuba Hubbard for absolutely nothing. And we don't know what's going to happen. Costs you nothing. And you can have him kind of waiting in the wings for you. One more guy could talk about this all night, as I'm sure you guys can hear or understand. I love Ramondre Stevenson in New England. So Sony Michel, is it Sony Michel? Is it James White? I love Damian Harris, but I think that Ramondre leapfrogs all of them, and it's a 1-2 punch of Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson. One other guy I want to mention, and I'll leave it alone, is Javian Hawkins in Atlanta. What the heck's going on with Atlanta's running back room? Do we firmly really believe that Mike Davis is the guy? Javian Hawkins could come in right away and be their RB2. And we know how that offense runs. We mentioned Kyle Pitts, Julio was gone. So there is some targets and touches to go around. And bam, Javian Hawkins is there. Right place, right time, guys.
I'm a diehard Detroit Lion. So with the draft that they've had and what they've done, I'm giving them like a C+, B-, especially looking at the way that things are projected for the future. They may be at the bottom of the division since they're putting so much hope and honest into Jared Goff. Is Goff the guy that we're looking at fantasy-wise? Is Swift a hit or miss? I mean, who are you going with? There's so many different options. I don't know in this receiving core whether they're looking at Geronimo or other guys that are coming in as in Tyrell, things of that nature. I mean, I'm low on what Detroit did in this draft, where they could have did better. I mean, everybody's high on Penny Sewell. I'm not as high on him. I mean, even though he's a big beast, but he's 19, 20 years old. Like, he's going to be going up against Khalil Mack and them. So there's a lot of questions and answers that I need from Detroit.
And I'm a Detroit guy, born and raised on the east side of Detroit. I live 15 minutes north of Detroit right now. And in terms of their draft, it wasn't awful. Like, I'm not going to jump on board and say, oh my God, it was that. We've all heard it. I'm sure, Tyrone, you know this as well. People are just saying, oh, this was the best Detroit Lions draft of all time. I wouldn't go that far. Hold your horses. But they are putting something together that looks to be special on the offensive line. And I know in all the years I've written or broadcasted, which has only been about 10, but I've been a true blue Lions fan for about 35 years here. but they've always made the wrong choices in the draft. That they spent all those, how many years in a row, Tyrone, did they grab a wide receiver with the first five picks? I think it was four years. And it was just people, again, new flashy toy. We got the wide receiver. We're going to get it done. But these guys, I do firmly believe all my trust is in Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes, our new GM here. It seems like they're building from the inside out, which I can never remember the Lions doing. They always did it the opposite. Let's get wide receivers. Let's get running backs. Let's go that route.
Yeah, I love that answer, Chris, and I agree with you. I think the Penei Sewell pick was a great pick. He's a guy I'm really familiar with. I think he's the best offensive line prospect we've seen in at least 10 years, maybe 15 years. This guy is an absolute beast. He is going to be a Pro Bowler for 10 years in this league. I'm that high on him. And I know we don't really talk about O-line and D-line when it comes to fantasy, but I'm with you, though, because it's the way to build your team. You build it in the trenches, and I like the direction they went. Taking a wide receiver in the first round before you have a good O-line is like building a house and putting up a chandelier before you have couches. And so I really like the direction they went in this draft. I do think wide receiver was a position that maybe they could have taken a second wide receiver at one of those middle rounds. But I like the kid out of USC. I think he was a great value pick as well. So I like what they're doing. I like the direction they're headed, certainly. But I want to thank you, Chris, for coming on today. It's been an absolute blast. Friend of the show, Chris Robin. You can find his work once again at theundroppables.com and follow him on Twitter at Detroit Beastie. Chris, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, absolutely. I enjoyed the questions. I enjoy chatting. So thank you, Brad. Thank you, Tyrone. And again, thanks for having me on. I could talk football, fantasy football, with good people such as you two day in and day out, all day and night. So thanks for having me.
All right, that's going to do it for today's episode. Really hope you enjoyed it, PGF Nation, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.